Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
You look at the Rams, and even though they are, as I think someone in the pointed out this morning, they haven't won their last six games in the Central Time Zone.
With Kramer in the backfield.
The mini fridge. Kramer, the fullback. The give to Johnson. And the Bears have tied the game after the takeaway.
Williams protected. Williams to the ball. To the end zone for DJ Moore. And a touchdown. Their first connection together. And Swift gets going.
I think that it's a gutsy pick to take the Rams here. I'm going to take the Bears to win the game.
92 yards away from tying the game with 63 seconds and no timeouts. Stafford unloads, hit as he throws. Ball game. Brisker. Bears win.
Awesome. The Bears.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Bears Monday.
Bears.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, yes, indeed. Back on the winning track. No third straight loss. 2-2 on the season, Mr. David. The Bears are back.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, happy Monday. Bears did what they needed to do. I think they won that game because they could not lose it. And it created, I think, as much of a sense of relief around Chicago more than a feeling of like rejoicing. It wasn't that impressive, but imagine the alternative. It sure beats the alternative. The Bears could not drop to 1-3 and still expect to be taken seriously as this playoff caliber team we've been referring to them as. What happened yesterday was that they kind of allowed things to get back on track.
Mm-hmm.
2-2 after four games isn't where you want to be necessarily, especially how ugly the loss was in Indy, but it does give you some hope that with the schedule, you're heading in the right direction again.
Yeah, they play some bad teams this year. Okay. I mean, we're still learning who these teams are. We got a pretty good feeling there are two unbeaten teams through the fourth game. We'll find out if a third can join that group tonight. I believe Seattle is 3-0 at this point, but we know the Chiefs are an unbeaten team. And I don't know, did you pick the Vikings to be the unbeaten team?
I did not.
That's extraordinary to me.
It is. They go into Green Bay, and even though Jordan Love was compromised and injured, and they took advantage of that because he was really bad early. What the Vikings have done is somewhat short of remarkable because they did it with this new quarterback in Sam Darnold, who has become the first quarterback in the modern era to go to a new team, win his first four starts, and in each of those starts throw two or more touchdown passes.
Yeah.
That's, in this age of free agency, that's saying something. So Sam Darnold, good for him. The Vikings have weapons.
Yeah.
I did not see them starting undefeated, which is why the Bears needed to win yesterday.
I think it's one of the reasons they definitely needed to win. And, they've got Carolina coming in here with the Red Rifle. They need to win that game. And then they go to London to play Jacksonville, and they need to win that game.
Both are opponents that should not be taken lightly, but they need to take care of because they don't look at the schedule as something that's getting any easier after this. When they come back from the bye week, then they can start to evaluate where they are, and they should be better. The expectations will be even higher. But you've got to win the next two games, and you've got to go into the bye week 4-2. And if you can do that,
and
a lot of the angst last week might seem silly in retrospect, but you know what? It was appropriate at the time, and I will always believe that. And I'm not saying that it's either one entity. It's not the media. It's not the fan base. It's not the players in the locker room. Combination of everything created pressure for Shane Waldron to adjust his game plan. I really believe that what we saw yesterday was in direct response to the reaction to the Colts debacle.
Well, and thank God. Thank God they're reacting to it, right?
You could not react.
I think one of the best things was that DeAndre Swift who was getting beaten up quite a bit, even on this show. I know you were laying off him, but I had no problem going after him a little bit.
Right.
This guy signed a 3-year, $24 million deal, and you were wondering why. And finally, yesterday, I think you saw a pass that led to a field goal that gave them a 10-6 lead that you felt good about. And then you finally saw him break a run, make a play, and score a touchdown. And it felt like a breakout game for him.
It did.
He led them in both receiving yards and in rushing yards.
And it was the first time since 2015 a Bears running back had had 70 or more rushing yards and pass and receiving yards in the same game. Mm-hmm. Do you know who the last one was? How about Jeremy Langford for $500, Alex?
Wow.
That is a long time ago.
Yeah, I would never have guessed that,
though. 2015, 9 years. So what he did yesterday, though, it was be the player that you thought you were getting in free agency. He wasn't the guy that was running 3 yards and not being able to cut and losing 12 on fourth and goal. I think that he had to be as relieved as everybody watching him.
Mm-hmm.
He had to be wondering, where are these holes that they thought that they were going to be? And the offensive line, without Tevin Jenkins, did what it needed to do against a Ram defense that, let's face it, that the opponent contributed to the Bears' success, modest success offensively, because this was not a very good defense, and it was not healthy either. Combination gave the Bears some opportunities they took advantage of.
Yeah, beaten up team comes in after an upset victory. We were told that the fine folks in Vegas say when you come back from 2 touchdowns down and then you go on the road, you're like 40% likely to win. And certainly that was the case. I guess the Bears are down 13, but it felt like 2 touchdowns. They came back and won the opener, and then they went on the road and lost. That happens. So it didn't stun me that the Rams, and we know what the record is in the Central Time Zone. We also know that it was 10 o'clock in the morning on their body clock when that game kicked off, and they played like it.
They did play like it. I thought Matthew Stafford wasn't as sharp as he typically is. Mm-hmm. He did throw a couple picks. One of them counted, and one of them was caught costly. Jaquan Brisker, the one he went out of bounds and came in, was a nice athletic play. I think the clincher was more timely and needed, but the Bear defense did what it needed to do. And against a pedestrian receiving core that at times Stafford made look pretty good. Whittington, Atwell, those weren't names that you thought were going to ruin your Sunday, but they nearly did. The Bears defense comes up with a big turnover. They tackled well, I thought, even though you know, Kyron Williams is a very good running back, very shifty.
Yep.
But they were getting yards way too easily on the ground. I think they finished with 119. But overall, the Bear defense did what it needed to do. The offense protected the football, which was priority one. And let's give credit where it's due. Yesterday was as dominant of a performance, I think, from a punter as you're going to see.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about that. I'm sure that'll be a question moving forward in the week, but I thought he was excellent.
He was outstanding.
Yeah, and maybe his best punt was the last one, where he pins the ball at the 8-yard line on a short punt, 35-yard punt, whatever it was. He had been averaging 60 yards a punt up to that point, and he still nails like a perfect punt, exactly what you needed when you needed it.
In a one-possession game, a punter like Torrey Taylor can become a weapon because of the field position battle you have to win. I was glad to see him get some praise post-game from players in the locker room because they recognize how much different it is to play defense when your opponent is pinned inside the 10 or the 20 than it is maybe midfield or further down the field defensively. Torrey Taylor, I don't know how he does it, and they don't really. It's almost like when Matt Eberflus speaks about him, it's like he's on his own little program. Like I see that every day. He's a guy that is just kind of, it's almost like practices by himself or does. He's kickers and punters are kind of removed from the team, but I don't know that there was any defensive player that was any more impactful than Torrey Taylor yesterday.
I see it every day. I see it every week. He's got a couple different sand wedges, I think. So he's pretty good.
Flusie was trying out some new material post-game.
Yeah, Flusie was feeling good.
He was workshopping the crowd.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That and the bag of chips and
he was
water off a duck's back.
You win a couple games and you're – you're all that and a bag of chips, and then you lose a couple and you're the other thing. So it's water off a duck's back.
All right.
What is the other thing exactly? I suspect I know.
I don't know.
I'd like him to articulate.
But his, I think that maybe if he's taking, this is just unsolicited, unrelated football advice, non-football advice. If he's getting help from a stylist, he might want to enlist some maybe comedic writers for him. Work on some stuff.
Wow.
That is who he is,
that would be rough.
I like corny floofs, but I don't think everybody really always goes for corny floofs. They don't maybe laugh at the jokes. Maybe that was supposed to be jokes, but they were funny. He was in a good mood. He should have been.
Yeah, I don't know if he should have been in that good a mode, given his team was kind of committing penalties all over the place. I got to say that the one guy that was most damaged by penalties, though, was Jared Verse. That guy might have been the defensive player of the week.
He was a problem.
If his sacks would have come.
He was a problem.
If there wasn't so much defensive holding by the Rams,
the Bears could not block him. No. Certainly not with Braxton Jones. No. I think they tried doubling him at one point. He was just a force, and he's fierce from Florida State. That kid can play. And you give credit to the Bears for being able to figure out a way to neutralize that a little bit. But you're right. The pre-snap penalties make you just drive you crazy.
Oh, boy.
And they're drive stoppers. They had five of them.
Yeah.
Cole Kmet had two.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
I mean, that's partially on the quarterback, though. I think Caleb Williams did a lot of nice things. I'm sure you're going to break him down. We'll talk a lot about Caleb Williams and where he is, but we have a young rookie quarterback and five pre-snap penalties. You have to kind of look at one being at least part of the cause for the other.
Caleb Williams led four scoring drives, right? And he threw his first touchdown to DJ Moore and threw his first touchdown at home, and it was to DJ Moore. So it was nice to see them connect. Are they connecting? I can't wait to talk to DJ Moore at 8 o'clock. It'll be fun to get his take on everything that went down and the difficulties that the Bears sort of faced early in that game. It was frustrating, and then they got their act together, and they did pretty well by the game's end.
Well, you asked that because there were some things, again, we're trying to interpret body language or read expressions from DJ Moore and sideline behavior and walking into the locker room at halftime a little delayed. And so it'll be good to talk to him because the chemistry between the two of them is an important part of this football team.
I also think the question of usage is one worth having a conversation with DJ Moore.
Because of not being targeted enough?
I believe, and I'll have to search this out, I believe he's 70. He came into the game 72nd among 91 receivers for the depth of throws that he's getting.
He's Mr. Horizontal passing game.
This is what I want to talk to him about.
And
so I'm going to find that statistic and
he had six targets, three catches for 22 yards. That's not making use of a guy that you paid to be your number one wide receiver.
Gave him the richest contract in free agent history for the Bears. I would love to see him go down the field and see them connect down the field.
It's a fair question, and I'm curious as well. I do think that coming out of yesterday, after a week of preaching to Shane Waldron to run the football and to be conservative and to Caleb Williams to protect it, that the number of targets for DJ Moore, to complain about that, I'm not saying you're complaining, but that's on a list, but it's not necessarily at the top of it.
He got more targets than the other wide receivers. That is how pathetic some of that stuff was yesterday.
Yesterday was not a wide receiver game.
No, but I would say that he's a really good wide receiver, and I would like to see him get more than a bubble screen.
No doubt about it.
Or a quick out or whatever they're throwing to him.
They're not doing a lot to get him involved down the field.
That's it.
I think they may fear the protection to give him that. Maybe things are being called and he's running routes. Maybe he's even open. I don't know if Caleb Williams might not be seeing him or having time to get rid of the football. because still pocket protection was a problem, even though the offensive line was improved. What we did see, though, was the Bears' ability to run the football. It improved so much from the previous 3 weeks.
847 texter, DJ, the most miserable dude on the field.
Well,
he took a couple of huge shots. He took a shot early in that game, and I was worried for him because it was like,
yeah,
he really took a big hit.
It looked like he laid down there.
He went up for the ball. Oh, he looked
for a
like
while. Looked
he
like he was on his in kind of the spread out on the field. Didn't get up right away. Yep. Then he beat a linebacker one on one for his touchdown, which was cool. And you know, I think he joined some rare company. I'm not even sure if this distinguishes him from everyone else, but it was the third touchdown pass from a number one overall pick in his career.
Hmm.
Cam Newton, Baker Mayfield, Caleb Williams.
Wow.
And I don't know if there's another wide receiver that has caught three touchdown passes from a number one overall pick.
That's incredible.
You'd think he'd be happier.
Well, I mean, you think number one overall picks would stay on the same team, not move around.
That's the thing, too.
But
how about Baker Mayfield yesterday?
Baker Mayfield.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice showing by Baker in front of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, we need to touch on that real quick.
Sure.
You want to?
About Tom Brady coming to the Bears?
Yes, it made headlines.
Yeah, well.
Made a headline. It was a throwaway line in an explanation about why he picked Tampa, but here's what he had to say about the Bears.
So I brought these. I saw them at the house, and I said, you know, I'm bringing these to show KB, and there was a lot of reasons to choose Tampa, and I made about 18 criteria why. And there was things all the way from the salary, obviously, to the weather, to the facilities, to the how great the players were. And ultimately, Chicago was a team, and I've never told that story before. They were very stealth in their recruitment. I was seriously considering them. But in the end, it came down to Tampa, and it was close to my son, Jack.
Yes, yes.
I love Bruce Arians and the role that he played in offense, and ultimately the great players like Mike Evans and Chris Godwin that I'm still out there watching today.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Could have had Bruce Arians.
Could have Bruce Arians too, but that was a long time ago.
Well,
that was several cycles ago.
Yeah, they hired what was the guy's name? Never mind.
That would be Mark Trestman.
Okay.
Yeah, because you know he made such a strong, forceful impression at the interview. But Tom Brady, before he joined and came out of retirement, or before he joined, not out of retirement, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2020. So that was his first season. It would have been the offseason of 2020. Pre-pandemic, I assume, or right in the midst of, that he was deciding whether or not to join the Bears. And the Bears went a different direction. That was after Mitch Trubisky's disappointing 2019 season, I believe. They were stealth in their pursuit.
I think we heard about that a little bit. It was not completely unknown.
Was it reported at the time?
I think at the time it was kind of on the table, but I don't know that it was.
It's funny he would just throw that out.
It's funny that he would mention it because it's the kind of thing. It's, you know, when people mention stuff like that, you just kind of,
Although I'm very impressed, and I liked it, the proper use of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
It is the plural.
Yeah.
So that was good. Not everybody knows. Not everybody gets that down. Tom in the broadcast booth is getting some good training.
Michigan man.
Yeah. Michigan man. 18 criteria. Yeah. That's a lot of lists. Those are a lot of lists. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah,
Tom Brady.
It's fun. It's fun to hear stuff like that. But again, as I recall, it did not happen. No Tom Brady, no Super Bowl. Didn't happen.
I don't think they were headed to the Super Bowl.
No.
The quarterbacks yesterday were definitely impactful. I thought Matthew Stafford was going to pull it out in the fourth quarter because they had set it up like how many comebacks he had and made, and it was there. And even though he was pinned down because of Torrey Taylor, as we mentioned, Jaquan Brisker made the play. Defense came through. Stafford did not add that one to the list because I thought that it was possible, but not against that defense.
I thought they opened really well. I'm talking about the Rams. I thought that McVay opened the game very well. You know, the Bears scored a field goal in one game. They were scoreless in the first quarter, but they've scored 3 points in four games in the first quarter. Now, If I'm not mistaken, I believe you tend to script 15 plays to open the game. They got to work on that script, man. I mean, you got to be kidding me. 3 points out of 4 games in the first quarter, no gouda.
Yeah, they're slow starters for whatever reason. They're too tentative early on. They still don't really take a lot of shots down the field. But when they do, I've been surprised, and this is something we'll get into more down the road, but Caleb Williams' accuracy on those touch passes and long passes has been missing. And I think that he, while protecting the football better and running the operation smoother, I feel like the next step is to see him complete some of those long passes that we kind of assumed he was going to be good at. And so far, I think that that's the missing part of his passing game.
I felt he was better yesterday. I feel like he's getting better. And I feel like that's 4 games in. When you're 8 games in, he's going to be even better. I mean, maybe I'm looking for things that aren't there, but I thought that some of his decision-making was pretty good.
Pretty good. Very good at the checkdowns and settling for things and not forcing the issue.
Yes.
That is definitely...
protecting the football. He's 2-0 at home. He has no interceptions at home.
And that is really a product of emphasis. So you see that they're going into these games, making sure that they're calling plays and he's conscious of it. And that's why he's not throwing a lot of vertical stretch passes. And the ones that he did, the guys are open and he's missing them. I agree with you. Between the beginning of season and 4 games in, we've seen some growth in that regard.
Right.
From 4 to 8, you're going to see some more. We're going to see some more progress, I think, and he's going to continue to improve. It's just that sometimes, at some point, you remember just how enormous the expectations were coming in. And so when he misses as badly and he overthrows and he doesn't hit the touch pass to Roma Dunze, who is open, and other guys, other situations, it's a little disappointing. But I think that you take what you can get. You remember he's a rookie, and he is headed in the right direction. And that's that was a positive sign yesterday.
Yeah, there were a lot of positives yesterday. Number one, they won the game, right? That's really the bottom line. They got the running game going. That was important to do. It was important to the team, to the season, to just show some understanding and some growth in terms of what they were trying to get done. They were very balanced when you look at the number of attempts. They had 23 with 3 set. That's 26 pass attempts to 28 rushing attempts. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
There was definitely that obvious that it was a point of emphasis.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other element of it, Olin said something on the pregame, which I thought was good. Maybe we'll ask him about it. But he was saying of all the passes that were attempted in that game last week, the game at the Colts where they ran 56 pass plays. He wondered, and he didn't know the answer, but he wondered how many of those were supposed to be run pass options and how many times. His thinking is that
Caleb Williams was checking them out.
A quarterback's going to throw if he has the option.
Yeah, no doubt.
Rather than run. And it felt like this time around they made sure they did some running plays.
I think they did that, and they also made sure of that by using the right personnel. The play that makes you smile the most, or maybe there's two of them. First and goal at the one, and then third and one. Yeah, Doug Kramer, the mini fridge play. Great nickname, Adam Amin. Great nickname. Doug Kramer comes in as a fullback. They've got 3 tight ends in the game.
Yes.
Not one, not two, but 3.
And Kerry Blassingame was eligible, was up, could have played, and was inactive. And you're like, wow, they're not going with a fullback. Oh, well,
no,
we're going to use this
guy. Got a fullback and a half.
Yeah.
So
that was pretty
Doug Kramer, very creative. And that was one of those situations we said all week, you know what the Bears need to do? Find a play that they're going to run regardless of the personnel in the game for the opponent. Say that you need to stop this. Good luck trying. And they didn't. So that was good. I thought that was Shane Waldron's response to all of the noise that was created last week by his unwillingness to run the football.
All right, we've got the pick six next. We'll get into all the stories of the day. There's other things going on in town. We'll get into that, too. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was the biggest first in the Bears' 24-18 victory over the L.A. Rams? Caleb Williams' first TD at Soldier Field. DeAndre Swift's first Bears TD. Jaquan Brisker's first interception of the year. Or Doug Kramer's first two turns as a fullback?
Well, I think it was kind of DeAndre Swift. You know, I think that that was nice of him to score a touchdown. But I think that the play that set up the field goal before the half was also really good. The short pass to him, the screen that he ran, that was a good
play. It's
like
preseason, wasn't it?
It was him like looking like – I mean, you wouldn't have known that there was any question as to how good he was or was he worth the money or whatever. I like that all these things happened. I think it's good that Caleb threw a touchdown to Soldier Field. I expect more. I'm glad that he threw a touchdown to DJ Moore. I expect more. I don't know if I expect more of the center at fullback. I think it was good. You know, Doug Kramer's been around a while and is working hard to try to get on this team, and that was cool to see. And they did react to some of the problems that they had at the goal line, But I would say that probably the Swift plays were the difference that really mattered.
Taylor made for Swift?
Yeah, you're 100% right. It's DeAndre Swift. He had a really nice afternoon in the first Bear running back to have 70 receiving and 70 rushing yards since a guy that, as you said earlier, Mully, like we would have never got that right. Like that trivia question, never would we have gotten that right. That would have been, unless you were like related, I don't know how you would get that. But I just have to say, I love the last option. I mean, Doug Kramer's not one, but two chances as the fullback. That was really cool. And again, I also like what Eberflus said after about it, like using everybody on the roster, right? Like, you know, taking advantage of who's available, right? Because if Blassingame would have been available, Blassingame would have been in that situation. And then the question is, like, would he have been enough? Like, would Kramer opened up a hole and Rashawn Johnson just followed it. I mean, he blasted the guy the first, again, here's a novel concept, blasting the first guy in another color jersey that you run up into, right? Novel concept.
That's why, to me, that was the biggest first of the ones mentioned here, because I think you have to understand and expect Caleb Williams throwing a touchdown pass, and it was his first at Soldier Field, okay. DeAndre Swift, about time. You were growing restless like a lot of people last week. About time that he not only has the holes to run through, but runs through them with authority. And so makes the right reads and gives you a glimpse of what he was in Philadelphia, in Detroit, when he was considered a Pro Bowl caliber running back. Good for him. But you got to expect that. Same with Brisker. Yeah, he's got it. All right, great splitsing. You got to pick that defense is going to be takeaway driven. That's a turnover. Great. What Doug Kramer in the backfield represented, though, was the best growth of the week. Shane Waldron grasping the obvious and also trying to, dare I say, establish an identity when you are inside the low red zone or when you're in short yardage situations.
I was with you.
I'm making a serious point here. Stop giving me the heart for Taylor Swift just because I made a bad pun. Don't torture me. When Doug Kramer lined up in the backfield, 6'2", 300 pounds, that's more than Kerry Blassingame, yes. And that was something that with three tight ends, short yardage situation, a guard or a center in the backfield, it was, I dare you to stop this, Rams, because you're not going to be able to. Just try. And that they did it once, and then they did it again. I loved it because if you're kind of leaning into some identity, it's got to be that. You have a running back that you have a stable of running backs that are pretty good. Roshan Johnson is your downhill guy, I guess. Khalil Herbert out of action. But Doug Kramer in the backfield, to me, represented the biggest growth, and the growth was in the offensive coordinator.
The mini fridge.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 9 a.m. on Mondays. Talking Bears with Mully and Haw. Caleb Williams received praise for not turning the ball over and his decision-making. Here he is in his own words.
To say it was a little better.
Little better. All right, so is Williams being game manager the new normal and the Bears' best method to win football games?
It is right now. Baby steps. I think we've got to be patient. We were maybe a little ahead of ourselves. I thought he would be further along in terms of his accuracy. I said that during the first segment. And of all the things about Caleb Williams' arm talent, that was the one thing I thought would be most obvious. And it can be on occasion. The touchdown pass to DJ Moore, even though it was against the linebacker, it was put right where it needed to be. You see examples of that. But he's better. I think big picture-wise, you are expecting that to happen naturally because it's something that he's always been good at. The decision making and the processing is something that you can't ever assume about a young quarterback, and which is why I think yesterday was significant. And I think the biggest part of his growth yesterday, a little better, and next week will be a little bit more. And the decision making and not trying to do too much and forcing the issue, which we saw in Houston, which we saw in Indianapolis, in not trying to do too much. Take the dump off to DeAndre Swift, and maybe he'll make 27 yards out of it. That's what we saw in preseason in a small sample size. And if that's the way that this offense is going, okay, for now, he will be great one day. I still believe that the Bears got the right quarterback and things are headed in the right direction. This is more game manager than playmaker than maybe we expected, but it was growth.
I agree. It was growth, a little bit better. Yes. Yesterday, all the conditions lined up for just needing a game manager. Now, he almost did turn the ball over the one time, right, on the sack, if I'm remembering correctly. But then there was the penalty on the Rams, so it didn't go that way. So and I thought that was more on him than the offensive line, that particular sack. I thought he held on to the ball too long. But yes, he was going to those checkdowns. He also, what else did he do yesterday? He ran the ball a couple times, and he did it exactly the way you saw it on Hard Knocks with the whole slip and slide thing. He did it, and they were good runs. Like, but he doesn't get hit, doesn't take unnecessary hits. So that was something else that I was happy he did that I complained about last week was not take. He took what the Rams defense gave him, and that was a step in the right direction.
Well, he took some hits. They just didn't count because of defensive holding. And that kind of – I was a little worried about a couple of the hits he took. I didn't like that at all. Yeah, he was a game manager. That's exactly right. I mean, that's the term that's used here. They played the field position game. They punted the hell out of the ball, did a great job with the punter. And, yeah, they decided to win a game. And they did it by running the football, by punting the ball, and by sort of modest protecting of the ball. They didn't attempt to get out over their skis on anything. And that's how you win games. That's a good way to win a game. I agree with you. I think he's going to be better as the year goes on, and I think he's going to be a good player for his career. But he's just getting going, and they are playing teams they can beat. And the way to beat them is to welcome them into your home and then
yes.
run over them and
yes.
play a field position game and win the game.
And that's okay now.
Yes.
But I would be very cautious, anybody who's bailing on Caleb Williams right now because his numbers aren't.
No, I don't think anyone is. I think there's a slight improvement, as he said, a little better.
Right.
He is getting better. That was good.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
Well, he'll be answering questions with Mully and Haw at 7. That's the voice of Olin Krutz. What was the biggest reason DeAndre Swift's breakout game as a Bear? Was it Swift's running ability, the Bears' improved offensive line, or the Rams' bad defense? Or is this a combination of all three? Which was the biggest factor?
I'll go with pride. You know, I think he really took a beating. I think Shane Waldron really took a beating. I think Matt Eberflus really took a beating. And maybe the good mood is that they went out and they beat a guy who's a better coach than them. and they wanted to do that, and they needed to do that, and they, you know, I mean, here's the beauty of the whole thing. They listened to everybody. They listened to their leadership council. They listened to all of the stuff,
You're
the
here.
Noise that was all over the place, and they responded to it. And you got a running game, and you got some, you know, they ran a good short yardage play. I got to tell you, I think that it wasn't just about stuff that looked great on the whiteboard. Oh, look at this. You're not going to believe it. No, they did some basic power football moves, and that helped the running back. That helped all the running backs that aided in the passing game. I'm just saying, I think the reason it worked is I'm sure that there was personal pride involved in it, right? But I also think that there was a change. There was a tweaking of the scheme. And they did try to be balanced, and they did change the way that they were calling the game.
I think pride is a really good way to put it, Mully. Everybody involved, but specifically, you know, this offensive line has been getting a lot of grief, and they deserved every bit of grief they have gotten. But I thought Matt Pryor had a really good game. Like he learned how to go second level. He is a huge human being. Him next to the center, it's like two men. I mean, that's how big that guy is. And when he got a couple steps and his momentum going, wow. I mean, so I think the offensive line was a little more prideful. And, you know, even Braxton Jones had a couple of penalties, but they were like kind of tough guy penalties. You know, like he was ticked off, I think, and he was being more aggressive. And I think you need to see that out of that group. So I think pride is the right way to look at it. And I think the offensive line took a little bit more pride in their work yesterday.
Matt Pryor, 6'7", 332, but can he play fullback?
Well, then it wouldn't be mini fridge, you know. Then it okay. might be like, you
that's
know,
like big freezer.
That's dual bigger French than door fridge.
That's right.
Just ask it. Okay. So I think it's a matter of, yes, pride is important because they were challenged all week, and I think Swift started to hear some of the rumblings about what is he doing here and why are they paying him that. But I think it's also simple math. The Bears took 54 snaps yesterday offensively. DeAndre Swift had 23 touches. That's 43% of the time. He got the ball 43% of the time offensively. So these questions about Caleb Williams, the game manager, DJ Moore, the neglected wide receiver one, whoever else didn't get the ball, Cole Kmet didn't get his 10 targets again. DeAndre Swift, it was his show. It was another Swift starring at Soldier Field. It was a big stage. And he walked all over it. Yes, give me the heart sign. Everybody should be Swifties this morning if you're a Bears fan. They made sure that you would be by giving him the ball, handing it off, throwing it to him, and watching him do what he's paid well to do. All of the above.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Will the White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, invest in a new team playing now that he sent an apology letter of sorts to the fans following the team's historically awful season? Do you need concrete results instead of empty promises from the guy, or do you just want him to eventually sell the ball club?
That will be the familiar rhetoric. I think a lot of people came out of that weekend and the last home experience with the Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field with the same sentiments. Certainly they were represented in the signs and the fan base is fed up, as they should be. History was made Friday night in Detroit, not the kind of history you want to make. The manager you wanted and the broadcaster that was driven out celebrated with a hug in a clubhouse as the Tigers go to the playoffs. The White Sox are left to pick up the pieces. They got a long way to go. Jerry Reinsdorf issued a statement, and it will be actions, not words, that dictate how you respond to this season, how you feel about what just happened. The proof will come in who they hire as a manager. What are they looking for? It'll tell you who they can afford, what they're willing to pay, and what direction they're headed. Chris Getz saying a couple weeks ago in the booth that the White Sox did not plan to be active in free agency, to me, spoke a little bit louder than a statement from the chairman. Jerry Reinsdorf took responsibility for the season that just ended miserably. And he said there are no excuses. There are none. But you've got to start over. If this is bottoming out, then you've got to have a plan. And I think that you've got to spend money. You got to spend money and grow your farm system. You can do both. There's no rule against it. So the letter was expected. I wonder if he'll meet the White Sox media, the Chicago sports media, as he said. But I think he can talk as much as he wants to talk. It will be fascinating to hear from him. But the actions, the spending, the direction, the hiring, that'll speak a lot louder than anything he has to say.
Well, agree. Actions are always going to be the bigger thing. But just from the letter, whether said out loud or written in a statement, words are easy. I understand we need to show our progress through action. And I commit to you that everyone associated with the White Sox is focused on returning this organization to the level of success we all expect and desire. So now he's on record, right? In the end, we owe it to each and every one of you. Okay, you've said it. Now let's see you put it forward and move ahead.
Yeah, I think the thing that was interesting to me about this, and I agree with him, it's ultimately a failure, and he is ultimately responsible for the failure, and there are no excuses. But I think that, you know, I'm going to cut and paste this while embracing new ideas and outside perspectives. We will do everything we can to fix this for 2025 in the future. This will include further development of players on our current roster, development within our system, evaluating the trade and free agent markets to improve our ball club, and new leadership for our analytics department. That's the one that caught my eye. So now, all of a sudden, we're not going to have contrary analytics. They're going to have a new analytics department, and this is one of the things that he's promising. I would say get the airplane fixed too while you're at it. Get like a modern airplane. You know, make this franchise less of an embarrassment to people that have to play there. And I would also think that you will be hard pressed to find anybody who is a Sox fan who doesn't believe that part of the answer is selling the team. And that's just the situation that you put everybody in. So, you know, clearly by admitting your failure and it's your responsibility, you're acknowledging that someone else would probably do it better. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I don't know that there's a lot of people anxious to find out how Jerry has changed.
Grady Sizemore was on the station Saturday morning with Bruce and Ryan McGuffey on Inside the Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He made a case, or they said he would be interested, and obviously he's done. You finished winning 5 out of 6. Everything's relative. What do you think about him as a candidate?
What did I say? What did I say was the precursor for returning him? I told you on Friday, if he won out, he won the final 6 games of the season.
He won 5 out of 6.
He didn't win the final 6.
Okay, so he's not a candidate in your mind?
I don't believe so. I really enjoyed the fact that they won 5 of 6. Yep. I wish they had won 5 in a row and then, you know, kind of, if they were going to lose then. But, no, I mean, I felt like he had to win them all to be a real candidate.
There's a lot of questions in there.
Tom Ricketts, when are we going to hear from Tom? Over the weekend, Cubs legend Kyle Hendricks, White Sox ace Garrett Crochet each made their final starts for their respective teams. Who's more likely to be back next year, Hendricks or Crochet? Neither, both.
Well, I would say neither for either team. I don't know if Hendricks is willing to sign like a smaller term deal just to stay with the Cubs. I would imagine that they are going to try to get an upgrade. They want to sign another pitcher, and I think they want that money off their books. And I think that if he were willing to come back in a modest role, maybe not even as a starter, but out of the bullpen, I would think you could find a place for him, and then you'd have someone who could really help you if it came to that. But I suspect there will be a team that will let him play and that he will go somewhere else. I don't know that he's going to get paid a ton. I think Garrett Crochet is being traded. I don't think there's any chance. And I think this is interesting to me because I think it goes back to when we talk about, well, who are they going to sign? Aren't they going to sign some people? I don't think they are, because I don't think they're going to be signing front-line guys, because you sign a guy, you're going to lose 100 games next year. When are you going to actually have a winning season? Like, I think if you sign a guy, by the time his contract kicks in, by the time it's pretty much done, by the time you're good again, he's going to be out of contract. So I understand that little element of it, but I don't pretend like I'm happy about anything going on with the White Sox.
I'm going to go glass three quarters full here. I'm going to say both.
Woo!
I think Kyle Hendricks is good enough to compete as a fifth starter. You know, Tommy Hotovy has told us many times you can't have enough pitching. And I think some of those guys that are in the back end of the Cubs starting rotation would be better served, in my opinion, as relief guys that if you needed somebody to then spot start, you could have them as a three-inning opener or something like that. So I think that's a way for the Cubs to rebuild their bullpen is to move some of these fourth and fifth guys into the bullpen, my opinion. I also, if we want to believe what Jerry said, you know, be a great message to the fans?
What?
Signing Garrett Crochet to a mega deal. See? That would be a great message to the fans. I'm not saying it's the smartest baseball decision because, as Moe points out and we can all see, they are a ways away and he'd be coming out of the contract. But it would be a reason to go to a game every homestand because he's pitching.
Also, it would give you somebody in the clubhouse that could emerge as a leader. I thought it was very interesting. Grady Sizemore made the comparison to CeCe Sabathia when he was coming up in Cleveland. Young pitcher who, yes, he only pitched every fifth day, but he became a leader in the clubhouse. When you heard Garrett Crochet over the weekend after his final start, this is a guy who cares a lot about being a professional, setting a tone. You're right. That would be the best way for Jerry Reinsdorf not to issue a statement in words. That would be an action that would make a statement with money. Invest in a pitcher in the way that you never have. But look around Major League Baseball. Are those wise decisions to let those guys walk? Carlos Rodon, Dylan Cease. Look, they're example after example of guys who left Chicago and flourished. So I would think Crochet has a shot. Kyle Hendricks, thank you for the memories. Your last class, Professor, was all class. And when he left the mound on Saturday, if you're a Cub fan of a certain age, remember 2016, I bet you some people had a lump in their throat. That was emotional. Hugging players on the way off the mound, I don't know if I've seen that before. Hugging Hotovy, it was terrific. I think that he will be somebody who still wants to pitch in the major leagues, and I think he's ready for a change of scenery. I do think the Cubs are ready to move on. You need somebody more certain if you're going to be a 90-win roster. Maybe that's what Craig Counsell was alluding to. But thank you, Kyle Hendricks. I think he will be a fine addition to somebody's pitching staff. I just don't think it will be the Cubs.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What was the most interesting college football game over the past weekend for you? Notre Dame winning back some credibility after the loss to NIU. Illinois, decent Penn State loss. They were in that game for a while. And how about that Alabama-Georgia game actually living up to the hype?
Well, I'll tell you, Notre Dame, they beat Louisville. They had some help. I don't think that was Jeff Brohm's best day on the sidelines. So actually, Marcus Freeman was the best head coach on this day, Saturday. Notre Dame had to win that game to be set up for the rest of their schedule. Penn State, they have to feel good. They're Illinois going into Penn State. The line, I have to feel pretty good about the way they competed. I know it's not a victory, but boy, that was a rugged game. They gave them all they could handle until the late interception, but that was a pretty close game. I have to say, though, the play of the weekend, you alluded to Alabama, Georgia. What a great game. Ryan Williams is a 17-year-old, and his 75-yard touchdown pass, do yourself a favor if you haven't seen it already, go watch it because you want to watch it once and then 17 more times. You can't get past his spin, his athleticism, his speed, the burst. Alabama, Georgia lived up to the hype, exceeded it maybe. Good for Kalen DeBoer and the Crimson Tide. They start 4-0. That was something I didn't expect. And that kid, still a kid at 17, one of the most electrifying players in college football right now. Fun weekend.
It was a fun weekend. As you just said, David, exceeded the hype. And maybe, you know, some people might have tuned out because Alabama was giving it to them, right?
Yep.
Georgia roars back. And I saw when Georgia went ahead, I thought, wow, this is going to be the comeback of the ages. And then literally the next play on offense, 75 yards, Bama goes right back on top.
Yep.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was an incredible result. And they went up, what, 28 to nothing? And so, you know, you're watching that game and it's like a blowout. And it's like, wow, I can't believe that Georgia didn't come to play at all. Then, as you say, they come back and you have the 75-yard touchdown. Williams, unbelievable. I mean, that is unbelievable for a guy to be able to meet that moment at that age. Just incredible. And I think that was, you know, clearly the best game of the weekend. And I think the Notre Dame win was very important for them. And I really, I was watching that Illini game and, there were just a couple, they just couldn't score. You know, they just couldn't, they stayed in that game forever. And it was really fun to see. But ultimately, you know, they got some knockout punches. And no, there are not moral victories. Although,
no,
they are still ranked 24th or
23rd? They're 24th. Yeah. Indiana, who's now the new hot team in the Big Ten, they're 23rd. But Brett Bielema has to feel good about second straight hostile road environment.
Yes.
Second straight competitive game. They win in Nebraska.
How hard is that? How hard is that to go to Nebraska? Then you got to go back to Happy Valley. That's
so I understand they lost the game, but you have a lot to build on if you're Illinois, and you got to feel pretty good if you're Bielema.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. We've got the extra point next. It is Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Can you please address all the penalties in the Bears game? Which team made the worst series of mistakes? How do you forgive the pre-stat mistakes by the Bears? Is their schedule bailing them out?
You could say that. It was a sloppy game. It was a sloppy win. The Bears committed 10 penalties, 5 of them pre-snap. Unacceptable, really, when you talk about playing at home. It's not a hostile environment. You're at home. You shouldn't have 5 pre-snap penalties. Now, the Rams, fortunately for the Bears, were equally sloppy. They did miss a 43-yard field goal. There was some problem with the operation there that Sean McVay, I think, addressed post-game. They had problems in the red zone. They were 1 of 4 in the red zone. The Rams were. And you had all kinds of things that typically don't happen maybe with Matthew Stafford teams, but then he threw you the football. It was a sloppy game. And the Rams' mistakes were more costly because they came at a point in time where you couldn't have a turnover. You couldn't have an interception. And Matthew Stafford threw it to Jaquan Brisker. Now, you do want to give credit to the Bear defense, and specifically, we talked all week. I drilled home all week the idea that there was a coaching deficit on Sunday at Soldier Field. And because Sean McVay has a reputation for being one of the top offensive minds in football, maybe of this generation, and it's well-earned. Yesterday, I thought though Flusi had a very good second half. And yesterday, I thought the way they came at the Rams with an array of blitzes from the secondary, Brisker was felt. His presence, Kyler Gordon, again, there was some really good pressure on the edge. And Montez Sweat was just unblockable and took personal the fact they tried to block him with a young tight end. So anyway, there were a lot of reasons to be happy, but the pre-snap stuff is unacceptable. The Bears were sloppy. They got away with one because the Rams were sloppier, but it's kind of things that I don't know if this was a coaching victory in terms of how the Bears played buttoned up or anything like that, but they did do enough when they needed to do it, and they can learn from these mistakes.
16 total penalties in this game. Good thing Al Michaels wasn't calling the game. If you remember from Thursday Night Football, he was upset at all the flags in that game. But the Rams' penalties were worse because they kept giving the Bears opportunities where if the flag hadn't have happened, the Bears would have either had to have punted, they would have gotten a turnover. So the Rams' penalties were much worse than it ended up being. You know, when you lose total yards, time of possession, first downs, you typically lose that game. But the big difference was Rams, two turnovers. Bears, no turnovers. More penalties is also a stat that usually means you're going to lose the game. But I think the end of the question, is their schedule bailing them out? It's definitely part of it.
Yeah, there's no shadow of a doubt that it's part of it. Look, I'm sorry, but penalties are coaching. Penalties are discipline problems. Discipline is coaching. So if you want to look at the Bears coaches in this game, you cannot give a pass on 10 penalties for 84 yards. And honestly, part of the problem with this Pollyanna, oh, everything's great after you lose. Oh, we love that play. Oh, that's okay. No, it isn't, because you lost the damn game. And, you know, they're lucky that they won this game, because we'd be having a totally different conversation. And you don't think 10 penalties for 84 yards wouldn't be a part of it? That's almost 100 yards, which is a score. You cannot have 5 pre-snap penalties. That is nonsense. And I think the problem when you are all Pollyanna is that you are not, you are lowering the standard. The standard is the standard, and it has to remain that. And you gotta win, and you gotta figure out a way to win. And if you win despite making mistakes, okay, that's okay. Now you got good coaching points. But if you don't win, don't go around saying, you know, they criticized one thing last week. Matt Eberflus said that you don't want to coach the aggressiveness out of Caleb Williams, but he's got to protect the ball. He talked about the one interception, the one to Roma Dunze, that he didn't like. And that was a mistake, and that can't happen. And that's good, because guess what? No interceptions. So you're making it a point of contention. I would hope that he would deal with these pre-snap penalties and let people know that's not on. There is a standard, and you can't do that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a really bad thing to have penalties like that. Period, end of story. All right. That is our look at the pick six, at the penalties, at the Bears. We're going to get to your calls, 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Stretch for that football.
And now the tempo again as Swift gets going. There goes DeAndre Swift for his first Chicago Bears touchdown.
I seen somebody on the ground, and then I kind of lift my leg up, and it was, after that, it was just run. After that, yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. It looked like he leaped over a body as he got through the hole, and then off he went on his touchdown run, and it was a good one. It was fun to see, and
it was
needed.
It was needed because all week he heard about how he's not a downhill runner and how he's not the good fit and all those things, which I'm sure resonated, and I'm sure somebody made him aware that he was being questioned or doubted, and his numbers spoke for themselves. They were historically low for him, right. And then yesterday he has a breakout game. I think for his tenure with the Bears, he's had games like this before, but it bears repeating. They only took 54 offensive snaps, and he got 23 touches. That's an emphasis.
That's a lot. That's feeding a guy.
That's feeding a guy. That's trying to it's feeding a guy, but it's also saying that you got the point if you're Shane Waldron. All this talk about emphasizing the running game, they came in committed to emphasizing the runner. And I think that's what they did, and that's what they definitely benefited from.
The other element is that he had averaged 1.5 yards a carry up to this game, and he had 5.8 on average because he broke a 36-yard run.
That helps when you do that. Yep. And the Rams defense came in, I think, second to the last in the league in running defense. That was a bad Ram defense. It doesn't really matter. You still have to make him pay for being bad. They didn't do that against the Colts, so they took advantage of a Rams defense. They did it at home, and the offensive line without Tevin Jenkins, which I think is a key thing, Mully. I wonder where that is headed. I don't know if they have a clear idea how long he'll be out.
Right.
But they were without Tevin Jenkins.
Is a rib? Is that what they said?
It sounded like that. That's going to be a very difficult thing to heal.
All right. Let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Andy. Andy's on the road. Hey, Andy.
Hey, good morning, guys. Mully, I just had to give you mad props because I'm thinking back before the draft, and you're talking about we need to get a punter. And I got to tell you, watching Torrey Taylor yesterday, five punts, he averaged 55.4 yards per punt with a long of 66. The two in the fourth quarter pinning the Rams back on the goal line may have saved the victory. He was phenomenal. And then the other thing that you guys just alluded to, there was way more north and south running this time. So, I mean, they went right at him, that right side of the line in particular. They exploited that the entire game, which was great to see. You guys are absolutely right about the penalties. They really got to clean that up. But overall, with coaches, players, everything, I think this was their best overall performance of the season. And you think about just last year at this time, they were 0-4. So 2-2 is looking good, and improvement is not always linear, but I think they're headed in the right direction, guys.
Thanks,
great,
Andy.
Yeah.
It's a good answer. I think that yesterday was a response that it was needed. It was a relief that they won. They didn't necessarily dominate, but they didn't have to. They just needed to survive. They needed that victory badly.
Don's on the west side. Hey, Don.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I just want to say, yeah, man, the win got to be kept in perspective. It's a good W, but it's a great win for the Bears, not for a good NFL team. You know, I mean, I hate to be cynical about it, but, you know, I'm starting to try to grade our guys on the scale of greatness, you know. I'm tired of the moral victories. But as far as Caleb goes, progressing, you know, it looks good. He's standing in the pocket, not breaking the pocket at all. You know, when there is a pocket, you feel me, he's trying to hit the underneath check down routes and stuff like that now. So with Shane Waldron, what I would say now is build off of that. You know, teams are going to take DJ Moore away. They're going to play the high cover two shell, all that. Okay, now all you need is 3 yards on first down. You know, first and second down, you'll be third and four. Third down, you know, it's a convertible third down. Keep it simple. Simplify the offense and set up the advanced stuff. And I think when Jenkins does return, if Pryor is good on that left side, leave that alone. Put Jenkins next to right so we can have a for sure power side of the line. And so teams can start leaning to that side. And now you can play action and roll out the opposite way off of that. You know, so it's just about schematic scheme. You know I'm just a fan, but it sounds good to me. Okay, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don. It's an interesting idea if Tevin Jenkins comes back after missing a week or maybe doesn't miss at all. If Matt Pryor fit in well and seamlessly on the left side, which he seemed to, why not make a strength, keep a strength, and put Tevin Jenkins at right guard next to his...
I thought Nate Davis was back in a big part of the future.
Well, I don't know that he's a big part of the future. Did you see that he had a holding call they blamed on Coleman Shelton on television?
I saw that, yeah.
And the wrong guy, and that was one of the plays that he...
They may have both been holding.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was the wrong...
Darnell Wright probably had better performance... Watching the tape, he had a couple penalties that he probably would regret. But Tevin Jenkins next to Darnell Wright gives you a sense that that would be a good thing to have on your offensive line. They do like to run to the right side already. That would just make them more, I think, of a team to favor that direction.
Especially with the mini fridge.
The mini fridge. I love the mini fridge.
All right. We're going to bring in Olin Kreutz. We'll get a chance to talk to Olin about what he saw. What is your look of consternation?
No, I'm looking forward to hearing him talk about the offensive line in a way that
I
think could be fairly positive today, or at least encouraging. And he got a lot of encouragement from yesterday.
That's exactly right. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The mini fridge.